Hello and thank you for joining us on Sunday Nights. Right now, it's off to the UK to say hello for the first time this year to the editor of the Church Times, Paul Handley. Paul, welcome.
Good evening.
Well, Paul, first perhaps to the legacy of last year before we get into some of the issues of this year. What happened to the Archbishop's Make or Break Anglican Conference? I mean, the Americans, it seems, were given a gentle reproof and sent away, and the long-term issues remain.
Yes. Well, we've in a week or two's time, we've got a conference that almost nobody pays any attention to, which is the Anglican Consultative Council meeting. They meet every 3 years, maybe 3, 4, 5 years, and they are the people. In fact, it's a sort of executive of the Anglican Communion. Whereas the primates are sort of nothing, really, in terms of structure. They are the primates are the top people in every national church. But in terms of structural power, they can say what they like, but they can't enforce it. So when the primates got together at the beginning of the year and came to what at the time seemed to be a remarkable understanding and suggested quite gently to the American church that they should take a step back from being involved in the communion and just sort themselves out on the issue of same-sex marriage, you know, the usual stuff. They've got no way of enforcing it. It has to go to the Anglican Consultative Council. So in 2 or 3 weeks, we will discover whether they're going to comply or not. And the Americans are going to go along there and take part in the committees that they're not supposed to take part in. And we'll see what happens.
That's a very much a watch this space issue. Are there any sort of suggestions yet that people are beginning to agitate on it, or are they all just sort of quietly waiting and watching?
If you think of a pan of water, it's beginning to boil, we heard this week that the Kenyan primate is not going to go to the meeting because he thinks the American delegates aren't showing the right sort of attitudes to this. So if people start not appearing, then one wonders how effective the Concord is going to be.
Indeed, indeed. Well, we shall keep an eye on that one. Now to something that is in the news immediately, and it's even made some press coverage in Australia, as the Church of England has been criticised for having flawed safeguarding practices when it comes to children.
Yes, this has been a big story in the UK this week. It's as you describe. There have been various institutional and corporate moves to tidy up safeguarding, and there's a general feeling that safeguarding practices at the moment are quite good. The set of checks and balances are as good as you can expect in any sort of large institution, and one where lines of authority are so casual. But the Roman Catholic Church, the history is catching up with us, and quite recent events and the handling of them is now coming into the public forum. And sadly, not because the church is rather unlike the Methodist Church in the UK, which has got a very good approach, where it instigated its own investigation. The Church of England is it's rather waiting for various issues to come up. And we do not know how many cases there are, but we do know there are a number of survivors who are taking legal action. And the thing about safeguarding is that it's a cost. You have to employ a bunch of people. You have to institute a fairly rigorous process that everybody has to learn. It's not a huge cost, but spread over a national church, it's quite a big cost. So, sadly, the church has behaved like almost any other institution. It's only moved fast when there's an opposite cost, which is the cost of legal action by the survivors. Suddenly, the cost of safeguarding is less, or looks to be less, than the cost of compensation, of legal claims, and so on and so forth. So,
and I understand the criticism has even reached the office of the Archbishop.
Well, the latest case was a fairly standard piece of, sorry, I can't even, no, it distresses me to describe it such, but it's fairly common. It was a gay priest, a senior clergyman, Chancellor of the Diocese of London back in the 60s and 70s, who attempted to rape a young man. The young man escaped, and it was that one incident, which is shocking in itself. But what's come out is that the young man told a number of senior figures over the years about this event, and nobody did anything. There was an attempt at counselling early on. Two or three of the figures that he told sort of eight or nine senior figures, and two or three of them have no recollection whatsoever of him having said anything to them. It's not the sort of thing you would normally forget. No notes were made, no practice were instituted, and this. And then two or three years ago, he contacted Lambeth Palace and said, "This has happened. I want to tackle this issue again." And that's when the church started moving, and he was put in touch with a safeguarding bishop. Pastoral care was applied, and so on. But, and sorry, this is a slightly long story, but then it was mentioned that he was seeking financial compensation, and instantly the pastoral care was turned off, because the church has got insurance, and the insurance company brought its lawyers in, and the lawyer said, essentially, like when you crash a car, you're not allowed to admit anything on the roadside because it might affect the amount of money we have to pay in the end, so you have to cut off all communications. And that was the bit that was really heavily criticised in the review that took place in the week.
That, in fact, has been a critical issue in the Royal Commission proceedings in Australia, that whenever churches have taken that line, the fiduciary responsibility, where custodians of the institution line and the insurances have moved in, that has been the breaking point over which the Australian Royal Commission has been saying you failed to act, or that's the evidence they've been taking that has led to the most public criticism of the churches, that they acted instrumentally as agents of an institution rather than primarily as people with a pastoral responsibility.
Yeah, and we've got another story in this week's paper. Back in December, we had a very strong comment piece by Dr. Julie McFarlane, who's a Canadian law professor, but when she was a teenager in the UK, was assaulted several times. And she was being given pastoral care. But then the insurer's lawyers stepped in, and she found herself being negotiating with lawyers, hostile lawyers, over a case which the church had basically admitted had taken place. Again, she's reached a settlement with the diocese, and but the next step, and this is an interesting thing, that some of the stronger of the survivors are now pushing for a new protocol, a new way of dealing with these things. And the Archbishop this week said that this would be implemented. So the church is looking very seriously and very urgently at its safeguarding process.
It's an old cliche, isn't it? Even in a popular song, when will they ever learn? Let's move on. The coming referendum on Britain's relationship to the European Union is in the news, overshadowed by the political crisis concerning refugees in Europe. And in some ways, they seem to be being conflated. This presents an ethical dilemma, not just for the society, but I imagine for the church as well.
Yes. We've had two things recently. Our paper did a very rough ring round, and we didn't find a single bishop who was in favour of what's being called Brexit, exit, the British exit from the European Union. One bishop, for example, said that the whole of the referendum was simply a dispute within the ruling Conservative Party, because they were trying to see off the right-wing UKIP party in this country, and so the promise of a referendum was made at the height of a political crisis, and has absolutely nothing to do with whether it's economically viable or not. It was a political issue. It's turned into a political issue because we are now seeing quite a strong anti-immigration movement in this country, and it's being conflated with our involvement in Europe. People are saying, well, it's the migration problem, the refugee problem, is a European problem, i.e. not ours. The UK government has